Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to It's Storytime Gather Round on the World of Ink Network at Blog Talk Radio with your host, authors Christy Condaleo and myself, J.D. Holliday. Three Saturdays a month, we are here and reading a story or two to you. Parents, if you or your children have a question or comment, you can call in after the story is read. Our number is 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259. Or join us in the chat room here at Blog Talk Radio. It's Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on August 11, 2012. It's Story Time Gather Round can be listened to live at blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network, or you can listen to it on demand at any time you like at the same address or on iTunes by researching World of Ink Network. You can also find out information about us at our site. It's storytimeforkids.blogspot.com. Hi, Christy. We have a special guest today.
Hi, Jan. Yes, we have a special guest. Her name is author Maggie Lyons, and she will be reading Them and the Dorky Duet. Maggie, tell us a bit about your chapter book.
Oh, hi. Yes. Well, this one's about a boy who takes up a challenge. I'm not going to give the whole thing away now here, but he takes up a challenge. He's kind of reluctant to do it at first, but then it's his sister's challenge. His sister's name is Meg. She promises him a David Beckham autographed soccer jersey if he'll take her challenge up, and that kind of persuades him. So off he goes. He forms a brilliant plan, and of course it all goes wrong. And that's what the book's about.
That's great. Can't wait to hear it.
So I'm going to read two chapters from the book. And if I hear anyone snoring back there, I'm going to start reading the third chapter.
Oh.
So here we go. Chapter one. Now, this is Vin. Vin narrates this book. So this isn't me talking now. This is a 12-year-old boy. I should have mentioned that the book is a middle grade reader. It's for children 8 through 12. I knew as soon as I walked through the door, they'd hatch some kind of plot. My mother and sister sat at the kitchen table, grinning all over. My sister's mouth stretched as wide as a shark's jaws in a feeding frenzy. "Vin, Meg has the greatest idea for you both," Mom said. "Right. Meg's great ideas are good for one person, Meg." My sisters responded to my frown. "Seriously, Vin, you're going to love it." "Vin?" Trouble lurked around the corner when Meg called me Vin. She only called me that when she wanted something. Most of the time she called me Bev, short for Bevin, because I hated the way it sounded like a girl's name. "Why don't you two talk while you're setting the dining room table for dinner?" Mom said. She clearly didn't plan to be the first to spill the beans about their plot. The dining room was across the hall from the kitchen, so she wouldn't be in the middle of the world war that was on its way. "Someone coming to dinner, Mom?" Meg asked. We only used the dining room table when we had guests. "Yes, Uncle Jack." Uncle Jack was a marine biologist and pretty cool for an old guy. He knew a lot about deadly jellyfish, why eels are slimy, and stuff like that. I grabbed some of Mom's ginger cookies and lemonade and followed Meg into the dining room. As Meg pulled the napkins and silverware out of the sideboard drawer, I turned a chair around and sat so that the back of the chair became between Meg and me. "Here's the deal." Meg slid the napkins across the table like a dealer throwing out cards to players at a poker game. "We're supposed to play in the Halloween concert, right?" I'm trying to forget the concert, blowing my lips off in front of a bunch of klutzy kids and parents who have no idea how hard it is to play a trumpet. It's tough. Messing up makes it even harder. "Well, instead of us playing solos, I want you to play a duet with me." "Oh, no, not again. I finished writing my piece for trumpet and piano, and I think it's really cool. We'd give the first public performance of it, and I'd have a chance to win the composition prize. Meg gave me a phony sweet smile that made me want to puke. I've heard you composing that really cool piece, and it stinks. The trumpet part is impossible. I know that sounds like a rotten thing to say, but you had to hit Meg hard because she's so dumb. You're always so mean. Amazing how quickly Meg could forget her meanness to me. We don't make a good team. Remember the last duet we tried to play in public? Totally pathetic. I hoped that argument would stop the whole crazy idea, but no, Meg came right back at me. Mrs. Stein wants us to do it. Mom thinks it's a great idea, and you know Dad will agree with her. Mrs. Stein was Meg's piano teacher. Besides, you play much better now. Meg emphasized the now to rub in the fact I was the one who goofed up the duet the other time. Mr. Morgan thinks I should concentrate on lip work. He doesn't want me to start a new piece for the next 3 weeks. I was running out of ammunition. Meg grabbed the silverware and started plunking the knives down on the table. I don't think your teacher said any such thing. I called him just before you got home from school, and he thought it was a great idea. You're such a liar, Meg. Anyway, I still won't do it. You're better off finding someone else to play the trumpet part. Would she go for my last desperate stand? Meg smiled her sharky smile again and sat down next to me. Well, there is a way you could get out of it. Something sneaky was coming, because she looked down while she spoke. I could play the duet with Brad Stewart. He's an ace trumpet player, and his brother Binkley is your friend. You could get Binkley to invite you to their house. Once you're there, you can talk to Brad about trumpet stuff and ask him if he'd take a look at my composition. When Meg's face turned bright pink, and she practically buried her head in the table rather than look at me, I figured what was going on. She had a crush on a guy. All that stuff about playing a duet with you was a setup. You just wanted to put me in a tight spot so I couldn't say no. I bet all along you'd arrange the duet for Brad to play with. Slick, Meg. Very slick. Meg said nothing. Brad Stewart's a good trumpet player. You're right about that. We heard him play at the community picnic on the 4th of July when Dad almost set his pants on fire trying to light a dud bottle rocket, and Meg exploded in a hissy fit because someone spilled ketchup on her new cutoffs. Eyeballs, that's what everyone except you calls Binkley. He's in a couple of my classes, but he isn't my friend. He's a total nerd. He answers teachers before they've even finished the question. I can't believe you're asking me to make friends with him and talk his brother into meeting you. Playing Meg's duet was beginning to sound like a good idea after all. Why don't you pick up the phone and ask Brad yourself? Meg's face looked like a stewed tomato. You know I can't. I don't know him at all. Yet. That's the whole point. I can't just find his phone number and call him, and you know it. Look, I'll make it doubly worth your while. You won't have to play a duet with me, and I'll give you that remote-controlled helicopter you've always wanted for Christmas. Aha, now things sounded better. The helicopter's not worth the trouble. I'd rather play the duet than do what you want. You really drive a hard bargain. Okay. I'll get you a David Beckham autographed soccer jersey. Say that again. Your jaw is around your ankles, Vin. I really can get an autographed soccer jersey. I'd wanted a David Beckham jersey forever, but my allowance wouldn't stretch that far, and Mom and Dad didn't think the jersey was worth all the money it cost, especially as it wouldn't be worn, just framed and hung on my wall for my friends to see. Okay, if you're serious about the jersey, you've got a deal. How could you afford it? It so happens I've got connections. Meg stuck her nose in the air and spoke in her I know something you don't voice. Since when? What connections? My secret. It'll be the last favor I do for you. I promise I won't give you a hard time ever again. Meg looked as if she could hug me. I backed away just in case. Meg smiled. You're awesome. We'll call you your mission Operation Brad Stewart. Operation BS, you mean? Meg didn't giggle, but she did hug me before I could do anything about it. It was a pretty good bargain, all things considered. I'd get a David Beckham autographed soccer jersey and maybe wind up smarter, or at least be able to borrow Eyeballs' brain from time to time. I didn't want to be close friends with Eyeballs, but having a personal connection to a walking encyclopedia could be very handy for school study assignments. Mom, Dad, Meg, and I were ready for dinner an hour before Uncle Jack exploded on the scene. "How's my Vin?" "Just fine, Uncle Jack." "Look what they've come up with now." Uncle Jack dangled a keychain in front of my eyes. "Pretty cute, don't you think?" A plastic ball bobbed to and fro on the end of the chain, and inside it a couple of whales were chasing each other around in a miniature ocean. I didn't think it looked all that cute. "They are Western Pacific grey whales, the most endangered of all whales. The keychain is a promotional item for a wildlife foundation. You can add it to your collection, Vin." "Thanks, Uncle Jack." I put the keychain in my pants pocket, wondering how I would squeeze it into a drawer about to collapse from the weight of all the keychains Uncle Jack had given me. Uncle Jack gave Meg a tiny silver dolphin for her charm collection. If she'd worn all the charms our Uncle Jack had given her on one bracelet, her arm would have gone through the floor. "Did you guys know that if just three female Western Pacific grey whales died today, the whole species could be wiped out?" Uncle Jack was on a roll and kept the stories going all evening. Mom and Dad didn't get a chance to ask me how I'd done on my math test, which was good because they wouldn't have liked my answer. Before I went to sleep, I got a headache trying to think of an excuse to talk to Eyeballs. Asking him for the answer to a study question was out of the question because he would always stare straight through you and say, "What makes you think I've got the answer?" Offering to teach him how to play soccer wasn't possible because his eyesight was so bad he couldn't see the ball. I certainly couldn't help him with his algebra. He already knew it all. I had a feeling I'd earn every red stripe on the David Beckham soccer jersey. Chapter 2. The next morning at school, I was still trying to think up a reason to talk to Eyeballs. Of course, once I'd found a reason, I'd still have the problem of getting his attention. Although we were in the same seventh grade homeroom and the same classrooms for a couple of periods, we didn't sit close to each other, and telepathy wasn't an option. During break, I went to the library, a favorite nerd hangout I avoided as much as possible. I walked slowly around the stacks, pretending to look for a book, until I spotted Eyeballs sitting by himself in a corner. You couldn't miss him. His feet stuck out from the desk, and his red and purple plaid socks glowed so much they made my eyes bug out. As he read a book 2 inches away from his nose, he made notes with one hand and held down the pages with his other hand because a ceiling fan was flipping them. That gave me my brilliant idea. "I've got the perfect paperweight." I sat next to him and fished Uncle Jack's keychain out of my pocket. I slapped it on Eyeballs' book. The grey whales bobbed crazily around in their mini ocean. "Eee! What's that?" Eyeball squinted at the page through the glass bricks on his nose. I wanted to say, "A keychain, you moron," but that wouldn't have been a good idea, especially because Eyeballs wasn't looking at the keychain. He was staring at a gob of green goo that inched across the page. The ball had cracked, spilling the whale's ocean. Eyeballs picked up the keychain with a paper napkin, dropped it on the floor, and dabbed at the page with another clean napkin. Who else but Eyeballs would have had paper napkins in his pocket? "You've stained my library book." It surprised me that a nerdy person like Eyeballs could say anything so obvious. He looked at me as if I'd totally destroyed a sacred object, blown up a statue of Einstein or something. "You could try using bleach. My mom swears by it." I knew as soon as I'd spoken I shouldn't have said that. "First, perhaps you haven't noticed, but I don't have any bleach." Eyeballs' voice hit me colder than the gym shower. "Second, you can't use it on paper. When I get home, I can try to get it out with French chalk and an iron." "I'm sorry, Binkley. You can keep the keychain. The heat in my face reached meltdown, dangerous enough to clear the entire library, which I sprinted out of, leaving eyeballs staring at the beached whales. I felt like an idiot until sixth period history, when another brainwave came over me. Eyeballs sat one row over and two rows in front of me. He was being his usual totally boring self, never passing notes to other kids or flicking spitballs when the teacher wasn't looking. He sat so still, staring at the teacher or the blackboard, you'd think a steel rod had been pushed up his tailpipe. I wrote a note on a piece of paper, screwed it up into a wad, took aim. It hit the back of his head. If he'd been a normal kid, he would have reacted, but of course he wasn't normal. He looked down at the wad on the floor and ignored it. He probably didn't know what to do with it because no one ever threw notes at him, just spitballs. Anyway, Snitch Higgins, who sat behind Eyeballs, spotted it. Snitch's real name was Theodore Higgins. All the kids at school had nicknames. I guess you can tell how we felt about Snitch. Snitch reached for the note, read it, and laughed. That wouldn't have been so bad except Miss Foote, our history teacher, noticed what was going on. "Boys, I hope that has something to do with the Civil War." "Not really, Miss Foote, but I didn't write it." Snitch turned to look directly at me, wrinkled his nose, and shot out his tongue. He looked like a constipated iguana. Miss Foote took the note from Snitch and glared at me. "Bevin, did you write this?" Miss Foote always used my full name when she wanted to make me feel bad. I tried to think of something totally witty, but I knew I wouldn't until the end of the class, so I owned up. "Would you like to read the note to the class?" Miss Foote asked me. She liked to say embarrassing things like that because she had a twisted sense of humour. "No, Miss Foote." "I didn't think so. You can add exercise 5 on page 6 to your homework." She dropped my note into the wastebasket. Snickers buzzed around the classroom. My brilliant idea wasn't exactly working out. Miss Foote had always been on my stinky teacher's list. Now I put her right at the bottom. She'd have to do something colossally outstanding to work her way back up. After class, I pulled the note out of the wastebasket. I didn't want anyone else to see it because my spelling wasn't all that great. The note asked Eyeballs if he knew of a good website on Sherman tanks, because we had to write an essay on General Sherman, and Sherman tanks would be a safe way to start a conversation. At least it didn't involve leaky keychains. I ran after Eyeballs, but he disappeared into the debating team room. That was the last place you'd have found me. Another great idea shot down in flames. That evening, I avoided giving Meg a detailed report of my less-than-fantastic game plan. "Lots of homework, can't be disturbed," I shouted to Mom, running to my room and locking my door. But that didn't mean anything to Meg, of course. "Since when have you ever done much homework?" she said, looking through the keyhole. "Let me in." No peace for Tsar Meg's serf. Meg plunked herself on my bed and came straight to her usual point. "This room smells like dirty underwear. How can you stand it?" I shrugged and waited for the real reason she'd invaded my sanctuary. "How did it go with Binkley?" "I thought up a couple of brilliant ideas." "I knew you would." She smiled that toady smile of hers. But they didn't exactly go right. That wiped the smile off her face. Why did people think Meg was pretty? She looked awful when she puckered up. When she heard what happened with the keychain and the history class, she actually laughed before giving me a verbal 1-2 punch. "You've got until close of business on Saturday." Meg had no clue what close of business meant. She'd just like to say stuff that sounded good. "Lots of businesses aren't open on Saturday. Besides, close of business could mean 5, 6, or any time of the evening. Exactly what time do you mean?" 6 o'clock. That means you've got 3 days and..." Meg reached for my calculator. "I've got 4 days. We're at Tuesday at 5:30 now. Saturday at 6 is pretty much 4 days from now. 95 hours and 30 minutes. As usual, Meg was determined to have the last word. I can't let it go longer, otherwise Brad or you won't have enough time to practice the music before the concert. She stretched out the word you and dropped her voice at the end to really emphasize it. We have less than 3 weeks until the concert. Meg was good at repeating a point. She'd be a schoolteacher someday. I asked if she had any bright ideas, but she insisted it was up to me because she didn't know eyeballs or what happened at my school or anything like that. Meg was devious but couldn't think fast. It had probably taken her weeks to cook up her plan for me and Brad Stewart. Once, Bonnie Gadwell invited her to a movie. Meg didn't know Bonnie well, but she knew Bonnie's parents were stinky rich and had an awesome heated swimming pool with a humongous water slide. I couldn't believe Meg actually said she'd already seen the movie and wouldn't go with Miss Megabucks. Later, she learned Bonnie took another girl to the movie. When they went back to La Megabucks' house, they swam in the pool, went down the water slide, and were allowed to eat all the ice cream they wanted. If I'd been invited, I would have said yes right away, even if I'd seen the movie 100 times. You never know what opportunities will show up tomorrow. Meg took tiny steps on her way to the bedroom door as if her jeans were too tight or something. I'm glad someone's optimistic. You'll figure it out. At least your mind isn't as disorganized as your room. I know where everything is in here. If only Operation BS were half as organized as my room. So much for bright ideas. Maybe if I didn't try so hard, a genuine foolproof opportunity would drop right in front of me. Then again, messing up the library book was a real goof. Eyeballs wouldn't want to talk to me after that, would he? I pulled my lucky prehistoric megalodon shark tooth out of the drawer and stuck it in my backpack. I'd need all the help I could get.
Oh, that was great, Maggie. Thank you so much. What other books do you have you written?
Yes. Well, Dewey and the Seeds of Doom will be out in October. That's a completely different kind of story. That's a story about a Welsh dragon. A Welsh dragon who likes to sleuth.
Oh, that sounds cool. Now, where can our listeners buy Vin and the Dorothy Duet?
Vin, the e-book is available, both books, the e-book and the paperback are both available on Amazon. The e-book's in Amazon Kindle. If you just write in Vin and the Dorky Duet when you get to Amazon Books, it should pop right up. The paperback is actually published by Halo Publishing. That's halopublishing.com. And they also sell it at their bookstore. And Muse It Up Publishing, that's Muse It Up, all one word, Publishing, is a Canadian ebook publisher. They also have the ebook at their bookstore. It's in the when you get to their bookstore, you'll see a list on the left-hand side, and on the list is Muse It Young. That's a line they do for what they call tweens, middle grade books, Muse It Young. So you can buy it at the Muse It Up publishing bookstore or Halo Publishing bookstore or on Amazon. It should be coming soon. I'm not sure that it's already at Barnes & Noble, but it should be coming to Barnes & Noble very soon and other outlets. The other outlets are also listed on the Muse It Up Publishing bookstores list on the left-hand side.
Oh, that's great, because I know after hearing those two chapters, I know I want to hear the rest.
Me too.
You did a wonderful job.
Yes, wonderful.
Now, where can people find you and your books? Where can they find out more information about you?
Yeah, I have a website. You can find out more about me and the books there. It's www.maggielyons, that's all one word, lowercase, of course, maggielyons.yolasite.com. Yola site is Yolasite.com. And you can also find a bit more about me on Amazon when you get to the book page. If you click on my name there, it should take you to my author page. You'll find a bit more about me on Amazon. You can also find a bit more about me on at Muse It Up and Halo and Facebook. I have a Facebook page too, which is www.facebook.com Maggie Lyons Children's Books.
Okay. Well, Maggie, our time is just about up, and we want to thank you, Maggie Lyons, for being on our show and reading from her chapter book, Vin and the Dorky Duet. We enjoyed it very much, Maggie. It was a fun read.
Well, thank you, Jen. Thank you, Christy. I enjoyed being here.
Okay, I'm J.D. Holliday, and you can find me and my books at thebookgarden.net. My co-host is Christy Condaleo, and you can find her and her books at epiescreations.com. And again, you can find us at our site. It's storybookforkids.blogspot.com. Also, we are looking for children's authors with books about Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas holiday stories. Authors you can go to, it's storytimeforkids.blogspot.com, for the information, which is on the top right-hand side of the home page. We want to thank you for joining us. We have no show next week, but in 2 weeks we have author Sands Hetherington, and his book, Night Buddies and the Pineapple Cheesecake. Bye now.
Bye, everyone.